Right, welcome to the final session of the day, which is, for those who don't know the format, a panel discussion. We have here the four speakers from today. There'll be two more speakers tomorrow, and there will be a discussion towards the end of the morning tomorrow. Yes?
So, yeah, tomorrow is the same format, except that the speakers from today, they wish can join the general panel discussion tomorrow. It means that the speakers from tomorrow could join the panel today if they wish, but they're happy to ask questions from the floor. Okay. Tomorrow we have two talks, coffee break, and then panel discussion.
Yes, but who's on the panel?
Who will be on the panel will be the two speakers tomorrow, plus these people, these good people here too.
Oh, Marianne
won't be here.
Oh, no, Marianne won't be here, so
so we'll have to answer questions on Twitter.
Yes, you can do that.
A real essence.
Indispensable concept. Okay, we have a first question from Frank, a second question from, I think, Peter, a third question from Bob.
Frank,
that'll get us...
Yeah, Frank was first.
I know.
Yes.
So that'll get us started. So, Frank, your question.
While you're talking, Marianne, it's all fresh in our minds. Just going back to it, I thought something that very much clarifies your interpretation of this is that if Earth Oscar, had taken a sample back to Earth or from Twin Earth or in 1749, and he'd say, here's my sample, wonderful, of water, not just pieces, water. And the next year, H2O had been identified as what water was. And he said, and I've got some here. And the scientists had a look at it. No, this is something different. He would have said, if he'd been convinced by the scientists, I got it wrong. Obviously, what's on Twin Earth isn't water. Although they call it water, and I thought it was water, wouldn't he have recognised his error?
Well, you say my interpretation, but I'd just like to say I was presenting Putnam's interpretation of his own thought experiment rather than my interpretation. I suppose it's my interpretation of Putnam's interpretation of his. But I think Putnam would agree with you. I agree with you. I think that if he'd come back before the discovery of the real essence of water, people would have thought it was water. And then if it had been tested and found to be XYZ, I think people would have said, oh, it's not water. But they could have decided, that there are two different types of water. I do think at that point there was a decision to be made.
But it was a decision about meaning, wasn't it?
It was a decision
about recognizing the difference in kind.
I think, for example, if somebody's testing gold, if it hasn't got atomic number 79, it's not gold. If we were to go to Mars and find something that looks and behaves and so on exactly like gold but wasn't atomic number 79, I think we'd have that decision again. Has gold got two real essences? So we allow that there are two types of jade, for example. So I do think it's a decision, and I do think it's a decision about meaning. Because clearly it's not a decision about real essence, because we know what the real essence is. The question is, does our meaning go with real essence, or does it go with nominal essence? That's the question. That's the only question we've got. Because the world determines what the chemical composition of water is, both here and on Twitter. Peter's... Shri has a...
There's a panel discussion. Everyone ought to be allowed to have a go at the questions if they want to.
It's playing off of your question a little bit, and what Marianne said is near the end of your presentation, you raised the specter of, do we even need to have the Twin Earth thought experiment? Because it seems that we have lots of examples where what turns out to be the nominal essence, we thought was the real essence for a long time. Stars, for example, twinkle and give off light, and then we find out later that some of them give off light in our suns, but some of them reflect light in our planets. And so we now have to revise. We have to revise our meaning, but we still call them stars. I'm just, do we need it?
There are decisions. No, I don't think we need twinness. I think there are decisions that we make all the time about what the essence of a thing is, and to what extent the meaning of the word goes with the essence or goes with how we recognise the thing, i.e. with the nominal essence. The nominal essence is how we recognise it. The real essence is the hidden, empirically discoverable stuff of which the thing is made.
Or what are the criteria by which we identify?
Or what are the empirical criteria by which we...
This could be the real essences for now.
Yeah, well, I use the word real essence because that tends to be the words used. But yes, it's the stuff of which the thing is made.
Janet or Mike wish to comment on that particular point? No.
No?
No. Okay. We'll move on to the next question then. Peter.
Right, well, I really want to come back right back to the beginning of this question about the importance of possibility or plausibility in these thought experiments, because a great many of the questions that have been asked and always come up when thought experiments, especially to an earth, are put to people, are questions about plausibility. For example, in to an earth, XYZ is not an essence, it's a description, or H2O, is a description of the behaviour of the stuff we call water. It happens to be a different kind of description, it's a shorthand description, but it's based on behavioural tests, just as drinking 90% of a human being, etc., etc. All these are tests of the behaviour of that particular substance. We'll come back to substance because that's a nice general word. They don't have any special, H2O does not have a special quality over and above 90% of a human being, or the stuff that flows in rivers and is dissolved, has a lot of salt in it in the sea, etc. Whatever percentage it is of the earth. It's the same thing under different descriptions. And they are parallel. Now, in the case of the Twin Earth experiment, there is absolutely no way, according to the thought experiment as described, that anybody, including any scientist, could discover the difference between H2O and XYZ. Because there is no behavioural difference. H2O is discovered by behavioural tests, describes its behaviour. XYZ would be discovered by precisely the same tests and will describe exactly the same behaviour by definition. Therefore, it collapses. The only thing that all these experiments show is a tenuous connection between what we think is the meaning of a word and its use. That there is a All of them, each one of them has a similar implication, that the model of rigid identity, rigid designation, does not work when you test the limits of its application. And plausibility, I come back to plausibility or possibility, is one of the ways in which you can test these limits. It is important, I think. You cannot suspend your disbelief indefinitely when looking at a thought experiment. I mean, there have been lots of protests here about Twin Earth. Everybody, all on the basis of possibility or plausibility.
I'm sorry, is this question...
I'm interested in both of you because the thing about possibility came up right at the very beginning. I appended it. But it seems to me to run through all these thought experiments. The same with Guru, by the way, same size.
Well, I suppose the reaction that I have is thought experiments, trying to go back to my defining them in some ways, is that they're exercises, and they're exercises in critical reasoning where you've got stuff that you're working with. That stuff might not exist in reality. But it's enough that we can conceptualize it and work with it and use our toolbox of experiences and principles to reason through it. So at some point, you know, whether there's a twin Earth or whether there's a beetle in the box, I suppose, doesn't matter, unless it helps us understand and think through things that we do know that are real. So proposing that there's a twin Earth, nobody is suggesting that Putnam's proposing that there is a twin Earth. No one is suggesting that we would ever be able to know what it's like to be a bat. But we're using those implausible things to try to unlock in a better way the things that are real and that we do have to live
with. Like meaning.
Like meaning, right.
Subjective experience.
And you don't think plausibility or lack of plausibility vitiates the thought experiment? Yeah.
No. No.
Okay.
But I mean, that's why I used the topaz citrine example.
Well,
I mean, come and look at Maximilian Gamesford's example, because it's structurally exactly the same as twin Earth, but doesn't use twin Earth. So you would find it much
it's more plausible. But much the thing about it, you gave the answer to that right at the beginning when you said you'd go to an expert. And the expert will then tell you the difference. And that solves the problem.
Isn't in this sense, because it seems to me also that you don't need twin Earth to get to a Putnam God, and that makes it, it's actually easier for me to think about it a little bit other than twin Earth, which twin Earth to me seems very complicated. I wonder if, for some folks, if there's something that is plausible and actually occurs, that resonates better, it fits better with your reasoning. For others, the exotic nature of the twin Earth and the fanciful nature of the twin Earth might accentuate certain features. Perhaps that doesn't work for me, it doesn't work for you. And we remember things, or it draws a sharper distinction.
Well, that's a very pragmatic approach. You want the excitation, you want the stimulation of wonder and the inquiry, rather than the discovery of a truth.
That's not what he said.
I think he did say that. Oh, that's not that was my understanding. Now you obviously different
my intention was.
Anyone else on the panel? Peter, say, did you say that H2O was a matter of behaviour?
That's how we discovered it's H2O. That's why we described it as H2O, because it behaves in certain ways under certain conditions.
Yes, but the end result is that what we have is a structure. H2O is a chemical structure.
Yeah.
And that has its own explanatory value.
Can you just try to speak up a bit, please?
I'm sorry. I will try. So H2O is a structure, and it creates its own explanatory role.
Yeah.
So people on the twin Earth can, in fact, investigate X, Y, Z. And, of course, then does that put pressure on the experiment?
Well, it's undoubtedly the case that... The fact is it's completely irrelevant, because this is a thought experiment, and the fact that it's because it's logical possibility that matters, not empirical possibility.
But that destroys the difference between a real essence and a nominal essence.
I don't think it does. Not if
well, because all of them, all of these, the nominal essence and the real essence are both based on behavioural tests.
Well, I disagree, but I think we'd better move on. If
real essence is arbitrary, isn't it?
Well, I suppose the level at which it goes. But if you've got to the molecular structure, some people think that that's... Sorry.
Gentleman at the back.
Brendan.
Brendan.
The two sides in this conversation, between Peter and Ryan, just to take just a question, seems to me to represent the long ongoing difference between humanities and science. On one hand, we have a mind, a brain, that likes thought experiments, enjoys them, sees the value of them, and is, and this is a common goal of criticism, blind to their implausibilities in the scientific perspective. Because people who have a scientific perspective have great difficulty in seeing, accepting, and believing the implausibility of the false threat. So perhaps this goes to the root of the problem, that if you have two different minds looking at the same problem, are we not actually on a twin Earth situation? Because we have one hand. So we have people from Mars and we have people from two Venus. With the same old problem. So does that not say that there are different sorts of logical conceptual formations, that our brains work differently, that can, at the end of the day, say that one form of logic gives you truth, and another form of logic gives you truth, because there are different ways of seeing things. And at the end of the day, how can we have a consensus?
Was that aimed at Brian?
a couple of reactions. I think that's interesting, humanities versus science. Now, without admitting, which I wouldn't, that there are two forms of logic, or that it does seem to me, though, that people are oriented in ways where they receive things, they receive truth in different ways. So, for example, something we haven't talked about between empirical tests and implausible thought experiments are similes and metaphors. Similes and metaphors, to me, aren't thought experiments. They are attempts to explain things. Often in philosophers, like Aristotle and Aquinas, use similes and metaphors quite a bit to try to explain abstract concepts. So if they're not using thought experiments, they're just trying to compare them to things that we know. Some metaphors strike us and we get it. Some similes do the same thing. Others don't work. So perhaps I'm also presenting a third way, but something between the empirical, the metaphor, and the metaphor. Yeah.
Briefly answer that. I mean, does that not really go to the heart of Wittgenstein and private management politics? Is that the use of similes, metaphor, while perfectly acceptable if you're thinking in terms of language, if you're making cases for law presentation, which is an argument. But on the other hand, we have a public discussion where the context is terribly important. The word has to have some connection to some other. That's how you think. So if you go off on the very abstract line, and this I think is where philosophy tends to go, or trying to go off onto the metaphysics. Whereas those of us, and I don't include myself, who prefer to be more grounded and actually have a plausible reality test, don't find it much less acceptable. So, yes, I mean, I think we're both saying the same thing, but at the end of the day, we all have different ways of looking at things. But at the end of the day, how can we agree? How can we be on a twin earth and live on the same planet?
Mm-hmm. And I think along those lines, and somewhere in I think it's in Philosophical Investigations, that Wittgenstein, when he's talking about how to end, my words, sort of the endless loop that you can get into, you have to call it a stop, like you mentioned. And he talks about it being fitting at some point, where this fits. That fit seems to be different for different people.
Yes, sir. Yes.
You mentioned the difference between, say, the scientist and the humanist, but there's also a difference between those who accept the notion of logical possibility and those who seem to be fixated on the what you might call the metaphysical or the physical possibility. So although an experiment might be logically possible, it irks some people if they can't see that it could at all be physically possible. If twin Earth, we know that XYZ is a concoction, but as Marion said, it's a logical possibility, isn't it?
Well, as I tried to make clear, I'm not clear it is a logical possibility, but if Lewis is right that there are no gaps in logical space, then it is a logical possibility. I think it's quite difficult to determine what is logically possible and what isn't.
It doesn't infringe the laws of logic.
Well, now you've just asked the question, what infringes the laws of logic? And it depends how you... I mean, it doesn't infringe the laws of classical logic, but of course there are parasitistic logic.
Yes, right.
Sorry, is this a follow-up? Or?
This was the journal for Mark.
Well, hang on, but Bob is next question. Bob.
Right, my question is about the word Thoughts. I accept everything to do with this thought experiment. I love thought experiments, and the wilder the better. But when the supposing Oscar has gone to Twin Earth, what Oscar means when he says that's water includes, I'm quite sure, and if you've asked me to say, that is the same sort of stuff that I'm used to on Twin Earth. Whereas when Oscar, what's in the other one?
Twin Oscar.
When Twin Oscar says it, he doesn't mean it's the same stuff as I'm used to on Twin Earth, because he's never been to Twin Earth. Oh,
it's on Twin Earth.
Sorry. Whoever's in the place they don't normally live in, his part of his meaning is this is the same stuff as I'm used to where I do live. Yeah. And so the statements aren't actually, the speaker meaning isn't, I would say, isn't actually the same.
Well, it depends what you mean by context here, because Putnam would agree with you. He thinks that the ostensive definition, water, means the stuff like that, and in brackets the stuff around here like that, which is why if it's Cheshire, it makes a difference, I think. If we'd found XYZ in Cheshire, I think we would have been very tempted to say water is XYZ or H2O. As we haven't found XYZ here, we're more inclined to say water is H2O. I agree with you that the same... So when I point to that and say that's water, I mean it's the same as the stuff I drink and da-da-da-da, but if it's gin, my words are false. That's what I mean by my meaning determines the truth value in context.
I'm not convinced that they have the same thoughts, the same intrinsic thoughts when they say that's water. Because in one case, the thought includes the fact that this is the same as water is somewhere else. Whereas it doesn't in the other case.
That's Putnam's conclusion. That the Earth twin, part of the meaning of his words water is that it's water on Earth, and part of the meaning of the Twin Earth, Oscar, is XYZ. In other words, the meaning is not determined by properties intrinsic to the twins, it's determined by the environment in which they learn their language.
I can see that, but it's slightly it does make a difference to what the intrinsic thought is. Because the intrinsic thought of twin, of the one who's in the wrong place.
No,
let's distinguish where I come from.
Intrinsic properties of the person and the content of a thought. So it's the intrinsic properties of the person that determine the content of the thought is what the claim is. So if the phenomenal properties, the behavioural dispositions, the neurophysical properties are the same, then the content of the thought must be the same. And by ex hypothesis, the twins are intrinsically identical. But if you're right that the contents of their thoughts is not the same, that must be because the contents of their thoughts are determined by something in addition to the intrinsic properties of the twins.
No, I mean that phenomenologically they are different thoughts. But if you investigated the neurons, you'd find there was an extra bit of neuron.
But you're conflating.
But this is like it is at home.
But you're conflating the content of the thought and the intrinsic properties that determine the content of the thought. Do you see what I mean? I promise you.
When you say the content of the thought, I find that such a vague thing. It's as if we're talking about a car, or the contents of a car. As if
the content is the. The proposition onto which the attitude is directed. So you've got, I have a thought, that's water. And I could have the desire, that's water. And in each case, I've got a different attitude directed onto the same propositional content. Propositional content is, that's water.
But that propositional content has an awful lot underpinning it. In your mind, which it wouldn't have in the mind of someone who'd never seen water before, but have just been told that's water.
Well, if you mean that my brain is wired up differently to somebody who has never seen water, the answer is yes. That's why behavioural dispositions must be kept the same, which is why we have the thought experiment in 1750. I think this is getting a bit too esoteric.
Okay, shall we move on? There's nothing
else. Yeah.
Can I just explain? If you wish to ask a question, please catch my eye, and I'm keeping a track of it. The next question is Chris Reason, and the one after that is Jonathan, and that's all I've
There's
got.
There's Shree at the back, Chadwick Prize winner, who's...
Shree, do you want to be on the list?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that all right for the order, or have I left you out? I didn't see
that. I'd like to get in there. Back to Marianne's.
Well, I'd better stick to the order. So that's 5, 6. You're number 7. Okay. Chris.
Thank you. This is a question initially for Marianne, but I think it applies to all the speakers. What's to stop me setting up a twinner that I set up specifically to support any old argument that I want to make? For instance, if I, heaven forbid, were told to argue for scientific creationism, I could set up a twinner in which I propose the only difference is that the world was created in 7 days, some 6,000 years ago, and use that argument to give credence to my support for scientific creationism. It seems I can support any argument I like.
Sorry, why would the argument support your...
Because I have designed it to specifically for that purpose. It seems it has equal validity to setting up a twin earth in which water is XYZ.
But the thing about the twin earth thought experiment is that it takes three claims and it pulls them apart logically by putting you in situations where your intuitions go in two different ways. I don't see that your creationist world, I mean, all you've said is there is a possible world in which there's a God who has created everything. Well, again, we go back to whether Lewis is right, that there aren't any gaps in logical space, and whether that is indeed a logical possibility.
But
it doesn't convince me that this is a world.
Well, it doesn't convince me either, obviously, but I can't see why I'm not allowed to do that.
Couldn't you? I mean, it seems like you could, in the sense that the twin earth argument isn't about what is water. Ultimately, it's pointing back to Putnam's attack on Cartesianism.
Yeah. Well, it's
I mean, water is just...
He uses it to deny the truth of internalism.
Right. Yeah. So water is just the stuff he uses.
He set up his twin earth, though, specifically to do that, one would suppose.
But he hasn't just set it up as, look, we can imagine that this is possible, so therefore it's actual. I mean, that's a bad argument.
Well, I mean, I hope it is a bad argument, to be honest, but I want to know why it's a bad argument.
For us, I mean, this is where we do go back to the what-if thing, because I think the requirement of a thought experiment is it's got to have a logical structure that pushes you, holds steady. Somebody mentioned the hypotheses earlier and said that the thing you haven't said about in your definition of thought experiment is you haven't mentioned the hypothesis or falsification or whatever.
I can see what's wrong with it. It's that the belief of the person who believes in creationism is false, whereas Twin Oscar's belief that water's XYZ is true. Both beliefs are true in situ.
But isn't that a red herring?
I mean,
water and creationism is...
Water and creationism are a red herring.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
so
what
you've got to have is a situation where you've got a null hypothesis, if you like, which is that meaning is determined by the intrinsic properties of the subject, The other hypothesis, the alternative hypothesis, which is meaning is determined by the environment, and the thought experiment is set up in order to see which one our intuitions go with. Now, the intuitions of professional philosophers tend to go in one direction, but Putnam's right. The intuition of most people in this room go the other way, but Putnam's wrong. And there are very good arguments for the claim Putnam's wrong, which I've tried to go through. I don't think they work, but you do. Fine. I mean, at that point, we start an argument and we try and convince each other. But what's important is, before objecting to an argument, is understanding the argument. And this is where Peter's probably right, that Twin Earth perhaps gets in the way of understanding what the actual argument is, because the argument is the logical structure, not the accretions that you know, water was a stupid choice to start off with.
It's not even really twin, is it? I mean, because on that, on the second...
Well, there was always that exception. So I don't think you've got the logical structure there in the creationism argument.
Well, I hope, as I said, I hope you're right.
Yeah.
But it seems not quite as simple as that. And, I mean, you could set up any thought experiment. I'm not only twin her.
But what would be your null hypothesis in this case?
Well, I'd have to think about that. It just seems that it is possible to come up with one, though.
It's possible to come up with anything that's logical. If there's no gaps in logical space, then anything is a logical possibility. But merely saying it's logically possible doesn't mean it's actual. What Putnam gets out of the Twin Earth thought experiment, arguably, is a claim about the actual world, a claim about actuality, not just a claim about what's logically possible. That's the importance.
Can we move on?
Sorry.
Johnson.
I wanted to put a question to Mike about guru and so on.
Yeah.
We started with a couple of terms, green and blue, which appeared to relate to the physical properties of reflected light, which could be measured in terms of frequencies. I'm not going to get into the fact that some people differ about the exact boundary here. I'm assuming that people do more or less agree about green and blue. Then we have gru and bleem, which appear to be introduced by means of a rule. Now, I don't know where the rule was supposed to have come from. One of your two jurors obeyed the rule, but where the rule came from or why it had any particular merit was never made clear. It was a rule simply about the way in which words should be applied, depending upon certain characteristics. It had nothing to do with the nature of the objects described, or rather it had a variable relation to the nature according to an arbitrary date. And I don't see how any change in the rules about how words should be applied according to a date. I mean, the law is full of changes in the names for certain things, but where a common law offence becomes under a statute, for instance, makes any difference to what people were looking at and meaning when they said blue and green and in spades. I cannot see what a change in rules about using words can possibly make to the principles, if there are any, of induction.
Well, the experiment was designed to put pressure on a particular understanding which actually derives from Hume. Hume saw regularities and said that we, by induction, create generalities from these limited set of regularities that we see. What Goodman noticed was that the regularities divide into two, basically. There are those regularities which are law-like, and those regularities that are not. He calls them accidental. So the thought experiment, which is a bit of a stretch, is designed to tease apart, gives a demonstration how some regularities are law-like, others are not. Now his question is, what is it that makes the difference? Now he has his own answer. He talks about predicates being entrenched, green, blue. We've used them. They have a good track record in our inductive practice. Bleen and grew don't. They're not entrenched. In fact, they're artificial, newly minted. There are problems with this because, at best, what he's done is to show the extension of the projectable predicates, i.e. the sum total of predicates that we can accept as justifying law-like hypotheses. But what he hasn't, what that still leaves is, on Goodman's answer, is to, what is it that makes the difference? Now you mentioned green and blue having certain wavelengths, okay? But in Goodman's auxiliary thought experiment, where the Roger twists around and says, no, on my language, it is your predicates that are bent. So that puts, immediately, we've got to do more than just say there's a disjunction. There are, in fact, quite common disjunctive predicates. For example, deciduous. A tree or shrub is deciduous if and only if it is leafy in spring, summer and autumn and leafless otherwise. So we do actually have predicates that have this disjunctive part of it. So I think Goodman's idea is that it's not sufficient then just to say that it's just natural kinds, because you refer to wavelengths, which people would accept as a natural kind distinction. But why should we limit
it? Real essence, indeed.
But why should we limit it to that? Because A, you've got to have a good definition of what a natural kind is. So it's not just the specifics of wavelengths, it's the general thought. How is it that we distinguish between law-like projectable predicates and those which are accidental or wayward?
Well, it does sound as though it relates also to the person of a private language, effectively. What's his name? Is using a private language when he uses bleen and grew. Nobody else need ever have heard of it. Nobody else needs to take the slightest notice of it. It's just a piece of private language, like, you know, some kids have special words for their breakfast porridge. But it,
well, there's a philosopher.
It's become a rather private matter.
There's a philosopher, Kahane, who also pointed out the problem with this entrenchment notice idea that. Science is forever coining new terms which need to be understood, applied, tested. So in essence, I can't see that's any different from inventing sort of grew bleen.
But your intuition may be different. Those two were invented, not based on any particular thesis or proposition or prediction, or they don't get anybody anywhere. They're merely an arbitrary way of applying certain words to things that people have perfectly good words for before.
True, but then of course, if we don't use those kind of terms, we don't tease apart easily in a graphical way the difference between law-like and accidental predicates.
Okay, shall we move on? It's 25 past, so this is probably going to be the last question, I'm afraid, and it's Sri at the back.
You mentioned one point that there are intuitive thinking is excellent counseling condition. So regarding a good scientific counsel like the one described on both twin earths, would it be reasonable to say that perhaps the neurological description makes more sense than a scientific description, which would not be intelligible at all to the minds of, you know, population inhabiting both worlds?
So I'm sorry, if I understand your question properly, so you're saying wouldn't the nominal essence as a meaning make more sense than the real essence?
Yes, right.
In some ways, yes, because I mean, a child doesn't know And in fact, there are an awful lot of adults in this world who don't know that water is H2O, and they are working with the nominal essence. But if it becomes important to them at any time to know whether it's water, and again, shifting example, gold, for example, there are lots of people who don't know that gold has atomic number 79, but many of those people care very much that something they've got really is gold. And if they're in doubt themselves, they might take it to an expert who will test whether it's got atomic number 79 and say, yes, it is gold, or find it doesn't have atomic number 79 and say, no, I'm sorry, it's not gold. So even though they don't know themselves, they defer to somebody who does know. And again, it sort of gives you the idea that gold is something with atomic number 79, not something that looks like and behaves like this, but the behaves immediately introduces the problem that we were talking about with the scientific experiments.
So, expectation on that point, I suppose, what you consider the actual essence is actually very intense and purpose driven in the sense of it.
I'm sorry, you'll have to say this again more slowly.
Sorry, the extension and the point you raised just now, would it be reasonable to say that your understanding of what constitutes true essence is actually very intention and purpose driven?
I'm not sure. So what you're saying is that the idea of real essence that I've been talking about is purpose driven.
Yeah, I suppose
it hinges
on the person.
You could see it thus. I think it's more, in the past, people have thought that there is something below which you go. I mean, once you've got H2O, if you pull apart that, you've got something that isn't water. Water is the combination of two hydrogen, one oxygen molecules. If you separate that, you've not got water anymore. You've got hydrogen, you've got oxygen. The DNA of tigers, yes, every individual tiger is going to be as different as every individual human being, but you can look at DNA, I understand, and say, oh, that DNA is from a human, that DNA is from a cat, that DNA is from a tiger, etc. So presumably there's a core of sameness around which there's an awful lot of, a bit like nominal essence. Most tigers have got, are orange with black stripes, but albino ones aren't. Most tigers have four legs, but I'm sure there's the old three-legged one out there.
Okay, well, bring this to a close. It's half past.